In today's episode, I speak with Jim Kingsbury about marketing mixes, profitability, and SaaS. Jim is a fractional digital CMO. He's an advisor and a profitability coach. So he's uniquely qualified to talk to us today about e-commerce, profitability, customer acquisition, and many more things. So let's dive right into the episode. I want to start where it makes the most sense. First off, by introducing you a little bit to the audience. And if you wouldn't mind just giving a quick rundown of your marketing career, some of those important touch points or milestones that you've had in your career.
Yep. Okay, sure. So I've been doing e-commerce marketing. Really, it's decades. It's decades plus. And it's always changing. It's always evolved, but it's always interesting. Kind of headlines and highlights. I mean, 2018 to 2021, I was head of digital for Allbirds. And so that's very kind of high profile, visible. Everyone knows that brand. Yeah, very fascinating. Kind of D2C poster child. But I've been doing a ton of e-com marketing kind of before that. I was at Zappos for a couple few years. I was at a flash sale site called One Kings Lane that in its day was kind of pretty exciting. I worked for something called art.com. I mean, you name it, I've done e-commerce. And way back when, actually, I was at Amazon. So I was at amazon.com in the very, 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 very early days. And so that's where I first got exposed and really kind of shaped how I think about stuff and frankly, why I think it's sort of interesting and fun. So that's the quick overview. And I lean, you know, kind of analytical marketing, you know, with some technology. I'm not a brand storyteller. I've kind of learned that stuff, but where I come from is the analytical side.
So as we dive a little bit deeper, you've got all these experiences under your belt. You've seen a lot of different things in marketing, but now you've kind of made this change to fractional CMO work. You're advising people, talking a lot about profitability, for example, and coaching there. But in terms of your fractional CMO work and kind of going more on your own, why did you decide to make that switch? What made it desirable for you to kind of go off on your own as opposed to working in-house again?
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, it's a great question. It's a potentially a long answer, but I'll try to keep it short. You know, kind of fundamentally, I'm at the point in my kind of career and age where I'm sort of thinking about these topics, like why? Like, why am I working? What is the purpose? What is the reason? You know, and it's important to have a really definitive answer other than, you know, kind of paycheck and all that stuff. And it's really, you know, I want to get energy from my work. I want to be energized by the work that I'm doing. And that's a starting point. It's like, okay, great. So what gives you energy? And that's different. That's different for everybody. But for me, you know, I really enjoy helping people and teams and companies and founders be more effective and more successful. Like that's what gives me energy and that's what gives me joy. And so, you know, within a single company, yes, you certainly have that opportunity to some degree. But being a fractional where you work with multiple companies at any given time, you know, and sometimes it's, you know, 10, 15 hours a week, sometimes it's an hour a week. But ultimately, with each of those situations, I hope I'm helping those people and I'm energized by that. And I'm doing it sort of across many companies, not just one. And so that's really where that comes from. And it's a luxury about where I am in my career and I'm able to do that.
Even expanding beyond that, there are a lot of people that maybe don't have as much experience as you, but are still kind of taking more of that freelance route as a marketer. Why do you think that? What are some other reasons why even less established people are kind of making that leap to freelance
work? Yeah. It is a lot. I mean, obviously, that's what marketer hire is all about. You know, I think maybe a related point. You know, it's true for me, but I think it's true for everyone. Two things, you know, one, it is fun. It's fun just to see multiple situations at any given time. It sort of minimizes, you know, kind of the less exciting, the boring stuff. But the kind of what's related about that is when you're in multiple situations, you can tap into something you've learned over in situation A. It's like, oh, I learned that and instantly apply it in situation B. And so that's fun because you're like, oh my gosh, I'm creating value. And it's helpful to everyone involved because you are creating value and you're instantly drawing on learnings from one place and applying it to another place. And so that makes it kind of exciting for the individuals who are doing it. But I think it makes it beneficial for the companies that are tapping into these fractional people that have experience in multiple companies at any or, you know, all at once. Yeah.
So let's dive into some of the companies that you're working with here. So you don't have to give any specifics here, but I want to just chat through kind of general trends that you're seeing in terms of how companies are operating. So we all know COVID happens, then there's this big boom, and then something happens financially, economically, where a bunch of companies start getting scared in the past couple of years, year and a half or so, and things just seem to have changed. And I'm curious what you're seeing in terms of what that's meant for how startups operate, especially with their marketing budgets and things like that.
Yep. You know, so the, I mean, the big change of timeline, I don't know, call it a year and a half ago, it's when, you know, capital markets or private capital markets shut down pretty much everyone. There's no money to be raised. There's no money out there. You know, so if you're a startup or any company, there is no lifeline. There is no lifeline to raise money. So you have to be able to exist on as a business just independently. And so, you know, what that means at a practical level, that means being profitable. And it's not a choice anymore. Like you have to, if you're going to survive, you have to be profitable because you can't raise money. So then what that's meant is like that crazy focus on profitability, which was almost a 180 degree shift from where things were even just 2 years ago. So that's been abrupt and sudden, but every single company that I'm a part of, like that is the mantra, you know, how do we get to profitability or for app profitability, how do we become more profitable? And, you know, I think it's healthy and positive because, you know, living off venture money forever and ever, it isn't sort of like kind of where anyone wants to be. So it's created this discipline, but some really big shifts in how people spend their time. Marketing budgets are down, you know, kind of investments in SaaS tools are being scrutinized very carefully, like everything. And that's where we are at the moment. You know, let's check in again in a year because it could change. But at the moment, that's the environment for sure. Yeah.
The follow up there would be, you know, if there's some kind of profit left over for these companies, I'm curious if you've seen where profits are going at this point. Like, is it to the point where companies are just stashing money away from their profits, or are they still trying to reinvest back into other areas? Like, what have you seen there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it sort of depends on the magnitude and level of profit. And so, honestly, most companies are, you know, say it, just getting by, you know. And so it's not like there's sort of these big pockets of profits that they can go pay dividends to shareholders. Like, that's not happening, you know. And so, you know, if there's some profits available, and there are some real success stories out there, and so it's not all gloom and doom. And so some companies really have made this work and do have kind of real profits, but to a company, almost all of them are investing in just new opportunities and new growth opportunities. They're doing it thoughtfully and responsibly and in a way that just doesn't burn cash because that's not an option. So there is, you know, kind of investment and innovation happening, but it's not, it's not widespread, and it's not like it's everyone is doing that. Yeah.
You mentioned that there are people that have done this well. Can you think of any examples of startups that used to be more growth at all costs, take funding, that have actually pivoted and are profitable now or have successfully done that 180?
Yeah, so that's a great question. It's not what I was expecting. So I got to think about that for a second. So, you know, the kind of the go companies that have pivoted 180 and now are profitable and are success stories. I can't instantly think of an answer to that question, but I'm super curious. But, you know, I was at Allbirds, and so Allbirds is a publicly traded company. And so all I know is what I read in the news, but I can guarantee you they are, you know, kind of working very, very hard to sort of improve the bottom line. But by no means have they kind of nailed it. I guess the slightly different answer I'll give you, though, is there are many companies that are doing fantastic, but they never raised money in the first place. And so from day one, it was their DNA. They had to be profitable from day one. So it's their culture, and they're scrappy, and they're really thoughtful on how they spend money. And there's a couple of there are many success stories of companies that have sort of done that. And I mean, that's what I think people should look to. And I'm going to do a shout out to another podcast. So it's Operators, and it's these four CEOs of really quickly growing profitable D2C companies. And it's the CEOs talking. And so they're talking about sort of all aspects of the business. And it's really, for anyone who really wants to sort of learn and hear from who's having success right now, it's a great podcast. Again, so Operators is the name of it. Yeah.
If you look at across your clients, I'm sure that you've helped people that are kind of well on their way, but also companies that are, well, let's say they have a lot of room to grow in terms of profitability, marketing performance, things like that. If you analyze a run-of-the-mill startup,
yeah,
how are they set up in terms of measuring performance for their marketing? Like what does the typical setup look like? What do they have in place and what do they not have in place?
Yeah, I mean, again, great question. It's a lot has changed in the last 2 years about how companies measure performance. You know, and a big reason for that, you know, the whole iOS 14.5 and kind of how that hit Facebook especially, but it hit it all flavors of measurement. So really in the last 2 years, a lot of new approaches to measurement have emerged. And I mean, certainly what's no longer the case is things like, you know, Google Analytics and looking at last click. I mean, really nobody's doing that anymore. So that's good. And I don't know if there's sort of a single standard out there. I mean, I could sort of rattle off three or four kind of approaches that are common, but you know, 5 years ago, I think Google Analytics really was that standard and everyone was using it. Whereas that's just not the case. And I think there really are three or four or five that stand out, but they each have, you know, 15 or 20% market share and nobody has 70% market share.
On the flip side of that, if you're looking at the best companies you've ever worked with or seen, what are they doing differently to measure performance?
Yeah. So again, it's not a new idea, but there are better tools out there to do it. But it's sort of this idea of true incrementality. I mean, again, marketers all talk about incrementality and everyone knows that it's important, but sort of the true lift from you're getting from your marketing efforts. And what I would say is there really are better tools out now to measure that. And that's what the best companies are doing to really understand what that looks like. And usually it's, or, you know, the best in class is, you know, geo holdouts or, you know, holdouts by geography. Some geographies are exposed to advertising, other geographies are not exposed. And then you measure the difference. And that's really the most robust approach that sort of top companies that I see and that I work with and I hear about, you know, that's what they're doing. So that's a really important one for companies to understand and really get good at.
I'd actually like to dive deeper into that because it's not something I'm super familiar with. I'm sure there are a lot of people that have questions on like what geo holdout means really.
Yeah.
If you wouldn't mind just diving a little bit deeper there.
Sure. I mean, the idea is, you know, you kind of pair geographies, you know, city A with city B, and usually it's a basket of cities that, you know, so, you know, kind of half a dozen or even 10 cities that will be exposed to a marketing tactic. And then you find a comparable basket of cities, you know, half a dozen or 10 or more, that will not be exposed to that single marketing tactic. So that's the only difference is one basket of cities gets exposed to the tactic and the other basket of cities doesn't get exposed to the tactic. And then you run the tactic for whatever period of time. And the downside is it usually takes, you know, really weeks and weeks, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, sometimes 8 weeks to really understand the impact. But that's what you do. You run it for 4 to 6 or 8 weeks. And at the end of the period, it's like, okay, total revenue in these cities that were exposed to the marketing tactic, what does that look like? Versus total revenue in the cities that weren't exposed, what does that look like? And what's the comparison? What's the difference? And that's the true lift. What did I spend to drive that true lift? Okay, how do I feel about that? And so that's the, you know, that's the approach. Again, really very robust. Downside's a little bit low. But that's the basic approach. Yeah.
And one of these other topics that you've talked about is marketing mix modeling, which
yes.
Again is like, I can understand at a high level just by looking at it, but at the same time, not something that I have gone deep into at all. So what is marketing mix modeling? And are there any practical ways that companies that have not heard of this to start kind of integrating it a little bit more into their business?
Yeah. Yeah. Let me start on sort of who it's suitable for, and then I'll try to describe it. But in terms of who it's suitable for, you know, if you're a brand, you know, spending less than, I don't know, $1 million a year, or even under $5 million a year, don't worry about it. Yeah. There are other approaches to understanding your marketing effectiveness. But if your budgets are $5 million a year or more, you know, into 10 and beyond, like then it starts to become useful and valuable. And again, the other kind of area where it's most useful is if you have many channels running at once, you know, so at least 3 or 4 or 5, you know, once you start to get above 3 and into 4 and 5 and more, and you have many channels, then that's when a marketing mix modeling really becomes helpful. So that's in terms of suitability, how to think about it, you know, and then what it is, you know, one thing I also say, it's been around for a long time. It's been around for decades. So it's not a new technique. And I'm not a statistician. And so, but what I'll sort of attempt to say is it's taking all of the inputs into your marketing strategies. And it's really, that's usually spend and sometimes other inputs like promotions, and doing this really heavy duty statistical analysis, you know, that really, it really is trained statisticians who do this stuff. There's no way I could do it, to sort of understand, or at least have a point of view, you know, tactic A, you know, kind of had this impact, tactic B had other impact, tactic C had some other impact. And that's the output. That's what it does. But it's, it is definitely for highly skilled people to execute. It's, you know, kind of your average person is not going to be able to execute it just kind of on their own.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. As someone that works, you've worked a lot with DDC, you've also worked with SaaS, you've kind of seen both of those. And now we see that there are an increasingly amount of SaaS startups that are targeting e-com businesses. So like that B2B connection going that direction. What are your thoughts on this overall trend?
Yeah. So that is a trend that I definitely see that I find fascinating. And it's really, it's classic kind of startup phenomena, sort of some problem or challenge exists in the world or emerges in the world. And in this case, it was iOS 14.5, and it made sort of the old tracking mechanisms really much less effective and just other privacy limitations. And so, gosh, you know, new wrinkle in the world we live in, or changed in the world we live in. And then these startups emerge to address that new change, you know, and again, as sort of a societal dynamic, it's super interesting that like, that's how our world works. And it's pretty great. You know, problems emerge and then entrepreneurs kind of develop solutions for those new problems. Anyway, so that's kind of the high level concept. But in this case of measurement, you know, click-based measurement has become harder and less reliable. And so alternatives to click-based measurement, there's a real need in the market. And so all of these startups have emerged. And so in both of what I've talked about, so media mix modeling doesn't depend on clicks. And so that's independent of clicks. And then this idea of geo holdout testing to understand incrementality, that's also independent of clicks. And again, they're vendors who have solutions for both, but they're really good examples of these, you know, kind of startups and entrepreneurs jumping in to address these new problems that exist. And you know what? I feel lucky to live in a world where that's true, because you're always kind of new solutions are always emerging.
So that with that kind of SaaS to e-com pipeline, that little pocket of SaaS now emerging, can you think of any other pockets of SaaS that are interesting or trending in a similar direction?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, sort of, you know, really recent in the last kind of couple few weeks for me, you know, so the big shakeup was iOS 14.5, which was whatever, 2 years ago, roughly, where Apple sort of made these changes, but it hasn't stopped. And so there's new changes, really a lot of them coming from Apple, but being adopted by others as well, that are further limiting, you know, digital marketers' ability to sort of measure and track in the ways that they did traditionally. And I'm actually probably going to write a LinkedIn post and I'll kind of give you the sneak peek here. So it's iOS 16.4. So again, the bombshell 2 years ago was 14.5. Now we're at 16.4. In 16.4, the new iOS is not quite the bombshell of 14.5, but it's kind of crappy. And it's not as well understood how crappy it is. And so it's basically, it's making it harder and harder to understand people coming to your site and their behavior. And I guess the specific example I'll give, very detailed, but if you're on a Safari browser, you know, so an Apple browser, after 7 days, even first party cookies are deleted, you know, so like it just happens. And so like the example that everyone likes to give is you do an abandoned cart. Someone comes to your site on July 1st and you see they're shopping around and they don't do anything. And then suddenly it's July 6th, July 7th. Okay, let's send them an abandoned cart. On July 8th, that cookie's gone and you don't know that person was there. And so you have no ability to then send an abandoned cart email as an example to that visitor. So that's a more recent example that's kind of emerged from iOS 16.4. And I guess where I'm going with this is that's a new problem. It's a new problem, slightly different, same general idea, but its specifics are different. And a lot of startups are emerging to address that problem. And the buzzword which is out there is called, some of them are calling it identity recapture or identity recovery. Like you knew who these people were, but then the cookies got deprecated and like, oh crap, we don't know who they are anymore. And these solutions help recover or recapture that identity that you once knew. So that's a much more recent trend that I find really interesting, and not so many people understand it, but I have a feeling in 6 months, many people will understand it a lot better.
That's super interesting. I want to wrap up with one final question here. Sure. I want to talk marketing tools. So MarTech a little bit. You can do this for yourself, or I'm guessing more of the marketing tools you use now are probably just to help clients out. So it's more in their tech stack. But if you're just looking at the landscape of tools in marketing that you have some kind of part in, what are the most powerful tools or the tools that you just enjoy using the most right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I guess I will start by saying there's so many out there, you know, and so that's maybe that's why you're asking the question, get my opinion about what I find useful. You know, if you know, you're early in the process, I would start with measurement. You know, in the old days, everyone was on Google Analytics. That was the standard. You know, GA4 has just emerged. I think without saying a specific tool, that's where I would focus. How am I going to understand the effectiveness of my marketing? And let me make sure I have a tool that I understand, that I feel is reliable, that I like the vendor. Because measurement is so core to all kinds of digital marketing. You know, that's a really important place to you know, kind of get started and focus. And actually, it's funny, you know, GA4 is now out there. There is no old GA anymore. You know, if you're not sure and you're like, oh my God, there's so much out there, I would start there. I would start with GA4 and okay, let me make the investment. Let me understand this. It's not the only game in town, but it's still probably the most prevalent. And so that's probably the one I'd begin with and get to know best.